Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo. And depending on where you are, maybe the sun's shining on where you are, but here in the Pacific Northwest, it's a dreary, drippy gray. I swear the sun god has decided he's going to stay in Colorado and not visit us at all, but that's beside the point. We have got a delightful journey that we're going to be able to enjoy through the writing of Marcia Shaver. Her book is called The Artist's Journey. And I loved how she described herself. She called herself a perfumed pilgrim, tackling the Camino de Santiago. Welcome to the show, Marcia.
Well, thank you very much, Donna.
I really found your book most interesting, because not just because of your story, but I found that the artwork that you had in it was just wonderful. And you did all of this yourself, didn't you?
Yes, I did. And the artistic component and orientation was really huge to me. We drew every day. If it was raining or hailing outside, we'd sit on our bunk beds and draw, or draw at a table while our laundry was tumbling. We would draw in the middle of standing in the middle of the road with our packs on, or sitting in mountain meadows. It was very important to me.
Well, it definitely just gives a delightful, delightful flavor and feel, visual feel to your book. Now, there is a Spanish proverb that you have right in the very first part of your book. It says, travel lightly, you are not traveling for people to see you. Travel expectantly. Every place you visit is like a surprise package to be opened. Untie the strings with an expectation of high adventure. Travel humbly. Visit people and places with reverence and respect for their traditions and way of life. Travel with an open mind. Leave your prejudices at home. Travel with curiosity. It is not how far you go, but how deeply you go that mines the gold of experience. And that is a Spanish proverb.
Yes, it is.
And that's right in the first part of your book, along with some beautiful, beautiful artwork. But I really found it fascinating that you, as a woman, decided to take a journey in another country because you had felt like your whole essence had become invisible. Tell us what happened.
Well, I think that as people in general, but women particularly, when we're in the role of wife and mother and, you know, daughter and sister and all those roles, a lot of times who we are at our core disappears, and we're kind of invisible. And so I really wanted to not only challenge myself, but give myself plenty of time walking with no other influences around me that were familiar, not even my own language, not a car, not my wardrobe, certainly not my pedicurist, to let my core values crystallize and reemerge about who I really am inside myself. And this was a wonderful opportunity to do that.
Now, you have a friend, Tanis, who
yes.
went with you on this journey. And both of you are artists.
Yes.
So you really were able to have a synchronization of interaction between the two of you and your rhythm for this trip. Why is it you chose the Camino de Santiago?
Well, I'm from Oregon Trail stock. A lot of my ancestors walked the Oregon Trail, and I've always been interested in walking. One thing about it was that I knew that I couldn't do it without any infrastructure. I know that sounds kind of shallow, but I wanted to have that spiritual component there, and I wanted to set a goal for myself that was really challenging, and it was, but also something that was doable. I think that we defeat ourselves so often before we begin because we pick something that's so outrageously difficult. There's no hope that we're ever going to accomplish our goal.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, believe me, 550 miles walking across a foreign country when I hadn't had a backpack on in 30 years, and I'm not a super athlete, and my Spanish is pretty pathetic. It's better now than it was, but that's a huge challenge. And I'm really, really proud of myself and Tanis that we made it all the way to the end. And mm-hmm. the great thing about that, honestly, is that once you've climbed that mountain, metaphorically, you never have to be afraid of it again. And I just went back and walked a different route of the Camino, and it was over 800 miles.
Oy, Gavil. 800 yeah. miles. My feet hurt just thinking about that.
It's kind of like walking from Seattle to San Francisco.
Whoa. I mean, that is really a lot of walking. Now, one of the things that I had to chuckle, there were many times that I chuckled when I was reading your story. One is that the two of you agreed that there was no whining policy and there was a soul-cleaning substitute.
Yes.
What was that soul-cleaning substitute? I just loved this. I could visualize.
Well, if one of us started to whine, we just looked at each other and went, uno, dos, tres, wah. So we kind of had this little 1, 2, 3 whine, and then it was over. And mm-hmm. you just walked on. You just
now
walked on.
Yeah, and that really is what it's all about. But what I found so interesting is that you found that once you'd made your decision to do this trip, you and Tanis decided you were going to do this together, there were all kinds of coincidences that started flowing. I mean, you had someone you met at a bookstore that had done the exact same foot trip.
That's correct.
2 years before. And that's amazing.
It is amazing. You know, it's part of the magic of the Camino. One of the things that's so fantastic is all the people you meet. People walk it from a variety of reasons, from deeply spiritual or religious to just for the fun of it.
Mm-hmm.
And they come from all over the globe. Honestly, the oldest pilgrim we met was in his 80s, and the youngest was 5, walking it with his teddy bear and his mom. And one of the pilgrims was blind, and he was being led by his friend. And the Camino that I just came back from, I met a man from Australia that had been on the exact same Camino at the same time that I had. We'd met all the same people. We were just within a couple of days of each other. And right ahead of me on this Camino was Yves, who was the Frenchman that was leading his blind friend. And I got to find out that they did indeed make it all the way to Santiago. I just find that so beautiful, and I find it just such a continuity that I think we have that in our lives and sometimes ignore it, but the Camino is really magic. It's very special.
Well, I think some of the people in the process of your getting ready for this trip were really fun, especially your Portuguese friend that taught you how to say Spanish. You wanted him to teach you how to say, you're very handsome, but I'm married, but instead he taught you how to say, I'll do it for $5. Now, that really is bad.
He's very naughty.
I mean, really, this is somebody, he must have really, really figured out that you were going to find out about this fast enough, and you've had enough, you had some episodes regarding that kind of stuff anyway, and it was so funny to read it. But let's talk for a minute about the fact that you had to prepare for this. Now, how many months did it take you to get yourself prepared to do 500 miles? I mean, we just don't say, gee, I'm getting out of the car, put on my hiking boots, I'm going to hike 500 miles. Excuse me, you can't do that. You really have to think about things. What did you have to do to prepare for this?
Well, I had been walking in the mornings for years, and with like 15 years with the same friend that I walked with this morning. But we'd kind of piddled along and looked at the landscaping. We're serious about our commitment to walk, but I really needed to ramp it up to another level.
Mm-hmm.
So I was doing a lot of horseback riding. I run a reform school for naughty horses that
uh-huh.
don't get ridden enough, and I grew up on horseback in eastern Oregon on a cattle ranch. So I don't ever get bucked off. So I did lots of horseback riding. I had a sensational downhill ski year, which really works your legs. And I went to the gym every day.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that for a series of probably four months. I decided really quickly. I just went out and bought my boots and my plane ticket before I could lose my nerve.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought, okay, now I really have to get busy and get ready for this.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're a woman in your 50s.
Yes,
so
I am.
This is something that really is a wonderful accomplishment for you because your physical stamina. A lot of people would say, gee, who'd want to do something like this in their 50s? Well, why not? I know of a woman that when she was 93, she was climbing mountains. She was taking her pickaxe and going right along with the other climbers. And she was in great shape. And I think that this is important, that people know that you, if you're going to do something like this, one, you do have to be prepared, but two, you're going to get so much out of it if this is something you want to do. Now, let's talk about your going into France, because you started off, what, in Rome? Is that where you started?
My husband and I and my son were in Rome, and then they came home, and I flew on to Spain to meet Tanis.
Okay. Well, what is this with France? The Saint-Jean Pied-de-Port?
Yes, Saint-Jean Pied-de-Port means Saint John at the foot of the pass, and
okay.
It's just on the other side of the Spanish border, and that's where we started. It's a traditional little town with cobblestone streets and window boxes full of flowers and red roofs that sits at the foot of the pass that we took into the Pyrenees. And it's the hard route that we took is the route Napoleon, where you go up and over the top. And Napoleon took his troops that way so that they didn't have kind of exposure to being attacked in the lower valley. And so we were only in France just the 2 days. But we crossed that pass, and we actually were fogged in and had to go back to the bottom the next day, which was a little bit harsh, but we were awfully proud of ourselves for attempting it.
Now, when you were planning this, let me digress for a minute. Your husband knew that you were going to be gone. This trip, you said, took you 6 weeks. The one
we were gone seven,
did,
yes.
Or you know, 6 to 7 weeks. So with your husband and your son, when they learned that you were going to do this, what was their response?
Well, first, like a lot of my friends, they kind of looked at me and said, are you out of your mind? Why would you want to do that? But once they knew that I was serious, that I really wanted to go out and challenge myself in this way and immerse myself in the art as well, they were 100% supportive. They said, you know, we'll muddle by some way. And they did. They were great, and my husband took care of the cats and all the bills and did everything at home, and we exchanged emails, and I called home about once a week, and I also, he followed me on Google Earth, which was really fun.
Oh, my goodness. Now, how did he do that?
Well, on Google Earth, you can just put in the name of any location, and not only does it take you to where that is on the map, but you can see photographs that people have posted, and you can also switch it up so that it's topographical. You can see, oh my gosh, you're going into the mountains again.
Oh, for heaven. Well, that must have really been fascinating for the two of them.
It was. Yes, it was. And they're great guys. I mean, I have a good team at home. I really do.
Well, I think that's wonderful. And think of how much you were able to share with them when you came back. Now, one of the experiences, and we're going to get a little graphic here, one of the experiences that you had, you're carrying this backpack, you have really got a lot going on. You are in, where is it, Orison?
Uh-huh.
That you find that it starts to rain, and it's just pouring, and it's pouring, and it's pouring. And there's an etiquette when you're hiking that you're supposed to follow, and I just thought, boy, oh boy, oh boy, this is one tough cookie, because here you are out there, and I didn't know that there was a special apparatus that women can use when they need to urinate so that they don't have to remove all the clothing. I said, hey, this is cool. I need to find out about this thing because I don't know if I'm ever going to be out in the woods like you were. But this was really a first-time experience for you.
It was. My friend that's a kayaker gave this to me and insisted that I needed this device. And so I took it along. I actually practiced with it at home, which is very embarrassing to admit, but it kind of allows you to pee standing up like a guy and not take your clothes off. So we got in this place where it was rainy and muddy, and I mean, we had sunk up to our ankles in mud, just, you know, almost over the top of our boots. And I thought, I really have to go, and I can't put this pack down. There's no place to put it. I thought, no problem. I have my handy little freshet. And so I boldly unzipped and stuffed it in my pants, proceeded to pee right down my leg and into my boot. And I thought, oh no, I've failed. You know, I've failed basic potty training. And
potty training 101 out in the woods, folks. Okay.
Yes, and I squished over to Tanis and confessed, my pantalones, whaley mall, my pants smell bad. And she was so good. She was very serious and said, oh, you know, do you need to change and what can I do for you? And then we both just burst out laughing. It was like, this is too uncoordinated for anybody to admit. And now, of course, the whole world knows, but that's all right because I later mastered it.
Yeah, see, I think that's what happens. You practice makes perfect in the real world when you're experiencing it. But this is one of the wonderful, many wonderful points about your book and your story, The Artist's Journey, is that you are portraying the real life stuff. You're not making it woo-woo or foo-foo. You're really talking about the real experiences that you had. And you talk about being in the hostels where there's such a deal and the various experiences that you go through there. You talk about the Basque horses of the Pyrenees Mountains. You've even got drawings of these horses, and they're just wonderful, wonderful animals. But your history that you have here, and one of the things that you surmised very quickly, and I'm going to quote directly from your book, if only all people could talk to each other, we could avoid so many conflicts and misunderstandings in this world. It makes me sad that in America we place so little value on language study in our schools. We're missing a rich opportunity to know others. You also talk about the thoughtfulness of the people that were sharing the journey with you, whether you met them at one point or another. And they were really caring. People were really thoughtful about each other.
Yes.
And I just thought, this is an incredible experience, just absolutely incredible.
It is. You know, there were many, many lessons on the Camino. It's just hard to explain how beautiful of an experience it is, because with all those things stripped away, like your cars and your houses and your job title and all that, you're just down to what kind of a real person are you? And you have to go on that. And I think people have a hugely life-changing wake-up call when they're down to that. And we found out that we're literally and metaphorically all walking down the same road. So if you can lend a helping hand, then you do. And sometimes that's literally picking someone up off the ground that's fallen down. I had a German man look at my feet that were really blistered, and just I was sitting on my bunk bed, and he just held my hands in his feet and looked at me, and he just basically said, I think you're going to lose your toenails, but, you know, your blisters are going to be okay. Are you okay? What can I do for you? Mm-hmm. And, you know, that simple little act of having just the physical and the visual and the verbal, how can I help you, it's very, very powerful.
You had the opportunity to find many different places, and you make, please correct me if I mispronounce these, the Albergues or the Albergues or the Refugios.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us what those are.
Well, they're kind of like a youth hostel. You have bunk beds, and sometimes there's kitchen facilities. The showering and bathroom facilities are all co-ed. Of course, they have stalls for the bathrooms and the showers, but you might come out of the shower and there's a guy standing there shaving or brushing his teeth. And so you take your own sleeping bag, and it's shelter, it's safe, it's warm, it's dry, and it's a gathering place for these souls from all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody goes along and stays in those, and sometimes they're sponsored by municipalities. A little tiny town will have one, or a church. You know, we slept in church towers, and one of them was a 300-year-old house by the St. Francis of Assisi Association. Some of them are private, but they're all just either a donativo, up to about €8 per night.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very reasonable to be able to stay there, and as a result, that's where the pilgrims stay. They're only for pilgrims. You have to have a credential to stay there.
Now, let's bring that up, because if anyone decided to do something like this, and is Spain the only one that has a similar pilgrim type of a pass? Is this the only place in the world you can do this, or are there other countries that also have a similar pattern? And what's required? What do you need to do to get a pass to do this?
Well, the Camino de Santiago, if you think about it, in medieval times, because it's been walked for 1,200 years as a Christian pilgrimage route,
mm-hmm.
to obviously where St. James is buried in northwestern Spain. If you think about medieval times, you began wherever you walked out your front door. So the Camino is actually a network of these trails from all over Europe, as far away as Scandinavia and England and Russia.
Mm.
So they are designated, and they are marked. In France, it's called the Chemin de Saint-Jacques. And in France, I believe that it's a little bit more expensive because you're staying in small private hotels. And I think Spain is the one that really has the albergue system very well developed.
Mm-hmm.
I met a woman this time on my Camino from Seville that had walked all the way from Cologne, Germany, where she lived.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, that's not the end. She walked to Santiago. Then she got on the bus and went to Portugal and walked from Portugal north to Santiago. And then she went to Seville, and she walked the Via de la Plata that I just finished. So she's been walking for almost a year.
Whoa. She must be as skinny as a rail.
You know, she's built just like I am. My German heritage, I looked at her and I thought, wow, this is somebody that has the short, stocky legs like I do and the long waist, and we're both about 5'3", and a fantastic, fantastic woman. It was great to meet her.
Well, I just think anytime you can meet people from different parts of the world and share various experiences, I mean, for her to be able to take a year to do
yes.
that is just stunning. Now, let's talk a little bit about the equipment that you
yes.
used, because you said the boots that you had, I mean, that these are things that if you're going to be trekking, especially the kind of miles that you trek, you're not going to have a shoemaker handy every few miles. So you really have to be thoughtful. What do you recommend, just regular hiking boots?
Some people walk in tennis shoes, but I have very small feet, and I find that the pressure on my feet is way too intense, and they get bruised and very sore quickly if I have a pack on.
Mm-hmm.
But, and, you know, the pack's about 25 pounds by the time you do food and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So what I recommend is a pair of very lightweight hiking boots with Gore-Tex so that they'll breathe but stay pretty waterproof,
mm-hmm.
that has a stiff sole. And for me, my feet were pretty miserable on the trek because I didn't realize that my feet were going to swell as much as they did. So the boots were too narrow. It's extremely important to buy the boots a half a size to a full size larger than you normally wear, and then take different weights of socks so that when your feet are not swollen in the beginning, you can wear the thicker socks and then you can downsize, but you've got plenty of room for your feet to do what they need to do.
You also talk about trekking poles. Now, I have a very good friend, and Nancy used to, in Oregon, she lived in Grants Pass, and she would go mountain hiking, and she and a friend would do it, and she said her husband bought her some hiking poles, and she said, wow, what a difference that made. And you used what you call your trekking poles, the hiking poles, to keep yourself stabilized when you were walking through various areas. And some people I know would say, well, why would you do that? But especially when you're going up mountains and irregularly patterned roads or paths, doesn't that help to keep you stable?
Yes, it does. And I, in the beginning, really poo-pooed the trekking poles before I went because I thought, I don't need these. But the truth of the matter is that as you're climbing up, you use it like, if you think of the difference between walking up a staircase for a long ways and being able to use a handrail while walking
mm-hmm.
up the staircase,
mm-hmm.
it makes a huge difference. And you can plant that pole and you can actually pull. It also keeps you, your body centered because you're not trying to compensate for the weight of the backpack with your back
mm-hmm.
and your body. And then when you're going down, it saves your knee joints.
Oh, my
so
goodness.
Much. And,
you
don't
go
twist
ahead.
Your ankle. You know, they're really important. I would never go without them again.
Something that you carried also, now we mentioned right at the beginning how when you started off on the trail, you went up and you had to go back because the fog got so bad that you had to go back down to the, what I'd call the level area. And you talk about some of the things that you carried. Water you carried,
yes.
For obvious reasons, but you also had a sleeping bag and a sleep sack.
Yes.
And you said that that was extremely valuable. You said you don't need both a sleeping bag and a silk sleep sack, but many of the hostels don't have blankets, so you're definitely going to need something. Have a sleeping bag? Because those can be pretty bulky.
Well, I'm going to do a little advertisement for REI here.
Mm-hmm.
I got a sleeping bag that only weighed a pound and a half. And then this was another one of those coincidences. Here I was in the Christmas rush in Seattle, and the guy that waited on me was from Galicia, which is the last province in Spain where Santiago is. And he said, you don't need one any warmer than this. This will be fine. So I found I found a very lightweight but warm sleeping bag. And then I got a waterproof compression sack. And so my sleeping bag, when it was all cinched down and stuffed in that thing, it was probably only 8 inches in diameter and about 10 inches long.
Amazing. And you talk about how when Mother Nature's urge hits you to always be sure that you have plastic baggies in whatever you're carrying, and this goes for hiking anywhere, so that If you do have to utilize the natural environment for the bathroom, then you, just like you do with the dogs, you clean up afterwards. And you said one of the things that you saw were bits and pieces of toilet paper all over the place, and you don't want to leave anything behind when you're doing these treks of any kind.
That's right. And I believe that people are becoming more aware of it, but that's something that they do in Europe that is kind of shocking. As civilized as it is and as clean and, you know, as interesting and sophisticated as the people are, a lot of times if they have to use the bathroom, they just leave the toilet paper. And that's pretty gross. So we, of course, are raised in the Northwest, and we have the leave no trace. So I just invented my little portable bathroom that had had tissue and a baggie, and if you didn't use it, you took it the next day, and if you did use it, you threw it away and started over again. And it was easy. It's very simple, and it helps you, and it helps the trail too.
Marcia Shaver is the Perfumed Pilgrim. She and her friend traveled the Camino de Santiago. This book, The Artist's Journey, not only is it visually just beautiful, she did so much artwork, but also the story is very down to earth. She shares so many of her experiences. It's a great book to just sit down and read, and though you may not choose to travel as she did by hiking over 550 miles, but it would enable you to share a journey with someone who is just telling it as it was, and there's a lot of funny stuff in here. There is some sad items that she experienced, but more than anything else, it's an adventure of a lifetime. And Marcia, I'm so glad you shared it with us. Now, your website is theartistsjourney.com, and that's where people can find out more about you. Thank you so much for being with me today.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Well, it's been a joy. This is Donna Sebo, The Artist's Journey, Marcia Shaver. Check out theartistsjourney.com. Really took a lot of guts, as far as I'm concerned, to do this. And wow, what an experience to talk about. The rest of your life, she did it not once, but she did it twice. Go in another direction. Donna Sebo, we're taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Telephone lines are now open, and I would be delighted to chat with you if you wanted me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Give me a buzz at 888 1-800-815-9756. That's our worldwide toll-free telephone number, 888-815-9756. My goodness, can you believe it? The 4th of July is just around the corner. How is this year going by so fast? Ooh, I don't know, but I'm sure that many of you have special plans for the holiday, but Donna Siebel Show will be live on Monday. So if you have a chance, tune in while you're barbecuing or whatever, but we're going to be here. I wanted to share with you some information about a unique happening. Now, we just were chatting with Marcia about her journey that she took through Spain, and there's so much history in Europe. It's absolutely amazing. Well, we have some history in the United States, and here in the Pacific Northwest, we're very familiar with Lewis and Clark, and they were two men that really did phenomenal things. And when you look back at that time frame, they didn't have anything like what we've got today in technology. Communication took weeks, maybe months, to reach whatever destination it was to reach, especially in the written form. And there was just such a different world. They were experiencing wilderness. Well, on July the 4th, 1808, that's right, 4th of July, 1808, while Lewis and Clark were breaking trail through the Rocky Mountains, they were in the Great Falls, Montana area, as we know it today, and they experienced something that they documented. They said it was an unexplained booming phenomenon known as sky quakes or mudus noises. And this is what they put in their journal. Since our arrival at the falls, we have repeatedly heard a strange noise coming from the mountains in a direction a little to the north of west. It is heard at different periods of the day and night, sometimes when the air is perfectly still, without a cloud. It consists of one stroke only, or five or six discharges in quick succession. It is loud and resembles precisely the sound of a six-pound piece of ordnance at a distance of 3 miles. Now, recorded reports of these kinds of explosive sounds, to the best of our knowledge, started in the 1700s. 1799 is one of the earliest ones, and it was recorded in East Haddam, Connecticut. But when they started doing research on this, they found that oral tradition, according to the Indians, these had been going on for a long, long time. 1805, they came up again, 1812 and 1813. Now, apparently the sounds resemble cannon fire or muffled thunder. But they say it's not just where they were in Montana. These particular sounds have been heard around the world. Now, they call them a sonic anomaly. And they can go back into many different cultures, and different cultures will talk about this occurring. And they say in today's world, a lot of people like to attribute it to UFOs. But apparently, there were quite a few of these sky quakes. That's how they classified them. From mid-1977 to mid-1978, where there were 600 separate mystery booms that were heard along the east coast of the United States, also heard from Nova Scotia to South Carolina, and the campus of the University of North Carolina was shaken by a boom that rocked the ground and measured 1.1 on the Richter scale. And in a small town of Rogersville, Missouri, there was this awesome unidentified blast that rattled windows and blew open storm doors. And on the other side of the country, there were thousands of houses 30 miles southeast of Los Angeles that were affected by two mysterious booms occurring 5 minutes apart. Boy, I tell you, when Mother Nature decides to do something, she does it. And we still try to figure out why. We don't understand. There are so many things that go on this planet that have been going on for a long, long time, and people still scratch their heads and go, I wonder why? I wonder why. Donna Sebo here, and if you want to give me a buzz, 888-815-9756. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking about the sky is green and the grass is blue. Debbie Scott is going to be my guest, and she's got some wonderful ideas to share. And then on Friday, we are going to be talking with a woman, Lynette Louise. We're going to be talking about her book, Miracles Are Made, Real Life Guide to Autism. And this book is an incredible publication. She's the mother of 8 children. 4 of them are boys that were adopted, and every one of them had autism. This woman has dedicated her life to finding out how to make these children well so that they could do it in a way that is not going to be painful, but something that's going to be liberating for them. And autism comes in so many different forms and ways. So we've got a wonderful lineup, and I hope that you will be able to join us. Well, I wanted to share with you, I've got a recipe for some Boston baked beans. Now, this is something that so many people enjoy. This is a recipe that people enjoy because for barbecue, 4th of July, it's just absolutely wonderful. And this is really, really simple. You can fix it on top of the stove if you want. If you wanted to save your time, just put everything in a crock pot and make it go, and then it'd be ready to serve, and you just carry the crock pot to wherever you're going. I mean, this is just really an easy recipe, and it's, I think beans have always been a favorite of so many Americans, and I know they, it's just really, really good. But Boston baked beans, well, just about everybody has their own kind of recipe if they are fans of that. But you can get some real easy things. So if you get a pad of paper and a pen, I'll be sharing that with you in just a moment. And I also wanted to tell you that if you're going to be doing some traveling, we were talking about hiking and backpacking in the first part of the show. Well, if you're going to be traveling, visiting friends, no matter where you're going to be during the summer, there's all kinds of items that we like to carry. We want to be sure we take as much as we possibly can that enables us to not have to worry about running out and buying things. So what are you going to carry during the summer? Suntan lotion, maybe some other liquids. And what you want to do is try this tip, because this has happened to me. I have a travel case where I put my things in a, you know, shampoo or whatever I've got, and it's in a case that the interior is lined with plastic. So if anything leaks or because of air pressure in the plane or where the bags are stored, then you don't worry about it. It's not going to get on your clothes. But sometimes you may not want to use, let's say what I use, a separate bag that goes within my suitcase for that type of thing. So here's a tip that I came across that I thought was a very good one. To prevent messes, like, let's say, shampoo bottles or suntan lotion or whatever, take the top off of the liquids, like your hand lotion and shampoo, and cover the mouth of each bottle with a small piece of plastic wrap before you put the tops back on. Another tip is don't fill the bottles to the top. When you have your containers and they're in the plane, the pressure inside the plane, and it makes the liquid swell. So if nothing else, even if you thought you've put that cap on tightly, it might become loose, believe it or not, in the process of flight, and you're not going to be able to twist it on, so the stuff is going to ooze out. This is a very good tip. Just take a little piece of plastic wrap, put it over that opening. Don't fill the bottle all the way to the top. Leave a little bit of a gap so it can expand and contract due to the air pressure, and you won't have a mess. It's a real simple solution, and I thought that was a very, very good idea, so I wanted to share that with you. Now, by the way, in the month of July, there's an appearance that I'm going to be doing in the Pacific Northwest. I'm going to be doing sort of an informal class on intuitive talents and how to develop them, and for those of you that would be interested, more information is going to be coming up about that, and I'll be sharing that with you, but that is going to be July the 26th, so that'll be coming forth. This is Donna Sebo. I know we're going to be taking a break in just a moment, so before I go into anything else, let me just share this thought with you. If you're in small business and you're wanting to utilize the web, the Small Business Search Marketing Survey did some research, and they found a lot of interesting information. Small businesses that conduct some form of online marketing say that new customers find them through search engines and the internet, And the most common online marketing technique is a company website followed by social media. And 21% of small businesses that were checked report that they use search advertising. Also, they use online marketing, and they plan to spend an average of $5,000 plus on search or social media advertising. Our world is changing, and three-quarters of small businesses plan to add some form of online marketing this year as well as next year. And there's company websites being added all the time, but they said 29% researched were going to use social media, and they want to add search engine optimization, mass email, or search advertising. It's really quite fascinating. And it can be handled internally within a business, or you can hire it out, resource it out, if you so desire. Donna Sebo here. When we come back, a recipe for Boston baked beans, and also a story about a young woman and a dog. So we'll be sharing that with you. You can also give me a call at 888-815-9756. We'll be right back.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedros accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com. To see more details, God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. I got that pad of paper handy and a pen. Let me give you this recipe for Boston baked beans. It's really simple, and it is very, very flavorful, and I know that you and your friends will enjoy it. And, you know, sometimes when we have recipes, we may decide that we don't like certain spices or certain flavors. Remember, recipes were meant to be adapted to whatever you so desire to adapt it to. But why not try this one? Because it's real simple, flavorful, and, again, quite delicious. Now, these can be put on the stovetop, and they're going to really have a good deal of flavor. I would suggest that you could fix them the day before and just let those flavors marry even stronger. There's something special when you do that, and then it's nothing to just heat it up. Anyway, what you're going to need is 8 slices of bacon. You want to cut the bacon in 8-inch pieces. You're going to need 1 onion chopped, and then you're going to need a clove of garlic, and you want to mince that. And you're going to need a 22-ounce can of baked beans. And you can find some that are smoked house beans. They call them grilling beans. It's just whatever is your pleasure you can use. Then you need a can of light red kidney beans, and you want to rinse and drain them. And then you need a can of cannelloni beans, and you want to rinse and drain those. And those are cans that are about a pound, not quite a pound, but about a pound. And then a quarter of a cup of molasses, 3 tablespoons of spicy brown mustard, 3 tablespoons of spicy brown mustard, 2 tablespoons of apple cider vinegar, 2 tablespoons of apple cider vinegar, and a tablespoon then of chopped fresh cilantro. And if you want, cook up some extra bacon, just in case you want to crumble that and put it on the top when it comes to serving time. Now, this is what you need to do. This is the stovetop version. You want to take a large pot, put it over medium-high heat. You want to add your bacon, and you want to cook the bacon until it's just brown, starting to get crispy, about 3 minutes. Then you want to transfer your bacon put it on paper towels, and you discard all but 2 tablespoons of fat from the pot. So you want to keep 2 tablespoons of that bacon fat. You return the bacon to the pot. You add your onion and garlic over the medium heat. You cook, stirring until the onions are nicely cooked, you know, soft. They're not turning brown, but they're just a nice yellowish look. And then you want to put in your baked beans, your kidney, cannelloni beans, molasses, mustard, and vinegar. Bring it to a boil, cover it, reduce the heat to medium-low, and just simmer it until it's heated through. I told you it was simple. That's all you need to do. It might take about 20, 25 minutes on the lower heat, and I would just say keep it on low, or better yet, just put it in a crock pot. Yeah, real easy. And it's going to really, really taste good. What I like, I have a crock pot where I take there's an insert in the crock pot, so I can remove it. I can cover that insert and put it in the refrigerator. So this kind of a dish you can put in your crock pot if you wanted, and it's just wonderful. It's perfect. It travels beautifully. The flavors are going to get better even on the second day. So if you made it the day before, it's going to be just wonderful, the day that you're ready to take it to the barbecue or whatever you've got going on. And you can't go wrong. It really is something that I think kids like, and adults are going to enjoy it. It just has some delicious flavors. So don't be afraid to try it. It's an easy thing to do, and it really does help you deal with what I call the rush syndrome, when you have all kinds of people coming over, or like on the 4th of July, you've got a special event that you're attending, and you go, gee, what can I take? This is something that's really super, really perfect for the event. Now, the next thing I wanted to share with you is, we've always heard that the eyes are the window to the soul. Well, I'm always intrigued with new studies that come up. And this came up about the eyes, and I thought, oh, this is fun. I've got to share it with you. If your eyes, this goes by the color of your eyes. Now, you don't have much choice about the color of your eyes. It's what you're born with. However, this is what some people have said about this. If you have brown eyes, people that have brown eyes typically are decisive movers and shakers, faster reflexes than most people. This comes from the University of Louisville. Yes. The reason that this is the case is that those people that have the dark brown eyes squint less when exposed to light, which helps your speed reaction time. You are someone that catches things well. You are just super smart. And a lot of that is related to the fact that you think fast. So if you've got brown eyes, that's what they say from the University of Louisville. That's what you've got going for you. What if you've got hazel eyes? Well, you're a multifaceted mystery. Hazel eyes seem to shift colors. If you ever noticed that, as a member of my family, that would always fascinate me, how their eyes would shift. Well, they could have shades of honey brown, can be also golden hues. It all depends on the light as to what you see with hazel eyes. They feel that people don't quite know what to expect from a person that has hazel eyes or shifting in color tones all the time. And for women, and maybe even for guys, it seems to give that sense of the mystique, bit of drama. And folks like to look deeper into the eyes of those people that have those beautiful hazel tones to try to figure out what the color really is, so they like to look more into you. They need to find more out about you because they want to know what makes you tick. Then, if your eyes are blue, hey, you're a strategist. Mm-hmm. Now, blue eyes are quite sensitive to light, and it's said that that's one of the reasons why people who live in the northern latitudes have blue eyes, because the sun is so scarce. Now, blue-eyed people have a tendency to squint more. Their reflexes are just a tad slower, and you like to work at your own pace. You are patient, you're methodical, and you're usually an excellent planner, and you want to be sure that whatever you plan is going to take you exactly where you want to go. And what about those green-eyed personalities? Well, the color green, as far as eyes goes, have not been explored very much. So they say the laboratories didn't do research on green eyes, but there have been polls on those green-eyed individuals, and there's not a lot of them out there. People tend to assume folks with green eyes are creative because of the color's association with nature, so they think you're just one of these very creative souls. However, they also feel that you're going to be just forthcoming with all kinds of ideas. But the color green is relatively rare. So what's attributed to this color is that a person that is born with green eyes is going to be an original thinker, and they have a lot of unique ideas. Well, my goodness, my story about the woman and the dog, I'm going to have to share that with you another time because we're almost out of time here. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Life is a rich experience. Be sort of like Marcia. Pick a time, a place that maybe you want to explore and go for it. Life is an adventure, and you can meet some of the nicest people when you are doing that, living and exploring to your greatest potential. Donna Sebo here. We'll talk with you tomorrow. Same time, same place. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.